Jensen and Sebastian were finally rewarded for their effort when they emerged once again in the daylight. Three tiers of balconies, fronted with roped columns supporting arched openings, looked down on the marble hall. Overhead, glassed windows let in the light, creating a bright corridor unlike anything she had ever seen. If Jensen was moved by the marvel of it, Sebastian seemed thunderstruck. "How could any people build a place such as this?" he whispered. "Why would they even want to?" Jensen didn't have an answer to either question. Yet in spite of how much she loathed those who ruled her land, the palace still filled her with awe. This was a place built by people with vision and imagination beyond anything she could conceive of. "With all the need in the world," he murmured to himself, "the House of Rawl builds this marble monument to themselves." She thought that there seemed to be many thousands other than the Lord Rawl himself who benefited from the people's palace, those who derived their living from what the palace brought together, people of all kinds, even down to Irma, the sausage lady. But Jensen didn't want to just then break her spell of astonishment to try to explain it. The corridor, stretching off in both directions, was lined with rows of shops set back under the balconies. Some were open, with a single craftsman, but many were glass-fronted and quite ornate, with doors, signs hung out, and a number of people working inside. The variety was overwhelming. Shopkeepers cut hair, pulled teeth, painted portraits, made clothes, and sold every sort of thing as could be imagined, from common produce and herbs to priceless perfumes and jewels. The aromas from the wide variety of foods were distracting. The sights were dizzying. As she was taking in those sights while looking for the Gilder's place, Jensen spotted two women in brown leather uniforms. Each wore her long blonde hair in a single braid. She clutched Sebastian's arm and hauled him into a side passageway. Without a word, she rushed him along, trying not to go so fast as to make people suspicious, but at the same time, get them out of sight as quickly as possible. As soon as she reached the first of the huge pillars lining the side hall, she ducked behind it, pulling Sebastian along with her. When people glanced their way, they both sat down on the stone bench against the wall, trying to look as normal as possible. A statue of a naked man across the way stared down at them as he leaned on a spear. Cautiously, casually, they both peeked out just enough to see. Jensen watched the two leather-clad women stroll past the intersection, their gazes cool, penetrating, intelligent, took in the people to both sides. These were the eyes of women that in an instant and without regret could decide between life and death. When one woman looked toward the side hall, Jensen sank back behind the pillar, pressing herself up against the wall. She was relieved to finally see the backs of the two as they continued down the main corridor. "What was that all about?" Sebastian asked, as she let out a relieved sigh. "Mord Sith." "What?" "Those two women, they were Mord Sith." Sebastian carefully peered out for another look, but the two were gone. "I don't know much about them, except that they're guards of some kind." She realized then that being from another land, he might not know much about those women. "Yes, in a way, Mord Sith are very special guards. They are the Lord Rawl's personal guards, I guess. They protect him and more. They torture information out of gifted people." He gauged the demeanor in her eyes. "You mean those with simple magic?" "Any magic, even a sorceress, even a wizard." He looked skeptical. "A wizard commands powerful magic. He could simply use his power to crush those women." Jensen's mother had told her about Mord Sith, how dangerous they were, and that she must avoid them at all cost. Her mother never tried to hide the nature of deadly threats. "No, Mord Sith have a power that enables them to appropriate another's magic, even a wizard or a sorceress. They capture not only the person, but their magic as well. There can be no escape from a Mord Sith unless she releases the person." Sebastian seemed only more confused. "What do you mean they appropriate another's magic? That makes no sense. What could they do with such magic if it were another's power? That would be like pulling out someone's teeth and trying to eat with them." Jensen swept her hand back over her head, under her hood, replacing the red ringlet that had fallen out. I don't know, Sebastian. I've heard that they use the person's own magic against them to hurt them, to give them pain. Then why should we be afraid of them? They may torture information out of the gifted enemies of Lord Rahl, but they can hurt anyone. Did you see the weapon they carry? No, I saw no weapon on them. They only carried a small red leather rod. That is their weapon. It's called an agile. They keep it on a chain around their wrist, so it is always at hand. It's a weapon of magic. He considered what she said, but clearly didn't yet understand it. What do they do with it, with their agile? His manner had turned from incredulity to a more calm, analytical questioning for information. He was once again doing the job Jagang the Just had sent him to do. I'm no expert on the subject, but from what I've heard, the mere touch of an agile can do anything from causing inconceivable pain to breaking bones to instant death. The Mord Sith decides how much pain, if the bones are to break, and whether or not you are to die by the touch. He watched out toward the intersection as he considered what she'd said. Why are you so afraid of them? And if you have only heard these things, why do you fear them so? Now she was the one who was incredulous. Sebastian, Lord Rahl has been hunting me my whole life. These women are his personal killers. Don't you think they would love to bring me to the feet of their master? I suppose. At least they were wearing their brown leather. They wear red leather when they sense a threat, or when they torture someone. In red leather, the blood doesn't show so much. He slid both hands over his eyes and then back over his white spikes of hair. This is a nightmare land you live in, Jensen Daggett. Jensen Rahl, she almost corrected out of self-pity. Jensen from her mother, Rahl from her father. Do you think I don't know it? And what if this sorceress doesn't want to help you? She picked at a thread on her knee. I don't know. He will come after you. Lord Rahl will never let you be. You will never be free. Unless you kill him, were the words she could hear left off. Althea must help me. I'm so sick of being afraid, Jensen said, near tears. So sick of running. He put a gentle hand on her shoulder. I understand. No two words could have been more meaningful at that moment. She could only nod her appreciation. His tone turned more impassioned. Jensen, we have gifted women like Althea. They're from a sect, the Sisters of the Light, that used to live at the Palace of the Prophets in the Old World. Richard Rahl, when he invaded the Old World, destroyed their palace. It was said to be a beautiful and special place, but he destroyed it. Now the sisters are with the Emperor Jagang helping him. Maybe our sorceresses would be able to help you too. She looked up into his caring eyes. Really? Maybe those with the Emperor would know a way to hide me from my murderous half-brother's wizardry? But he's always only a half-step behind, waiting for me to stumble so he can pounce. Sebastian, I don't think I could make it that far. Althea helped hide me from Lord Rahl once. I must convince her to help me again. If she won't, I fear I'll have no chance before I'm caught. He leaned out again, checking, then gave her a confident smile. We'll find Althea. Her magic will hide you, and then you can get away. Feeling better, she returned the smile. Judging that the Mord Sith were gone and it was safe, they returned to the hall to search for Friedrich. They each inquired at several places before Jensen found someone who knew of the Gilder. With fresh hope, she and Sebastian moved deeper into the palace, following the directions they were given, to a juncture of grand passageways. There, in the center of the intersection of two central corridors, she was surprised to see a quiet plaza with a square pool of dark water. Tiles, rather than the usual marble, surrounded the pool. Four columns at the outer edge of the tiles supported the soaring opening to the sky, covered, since it was winter, by leaded glass panels. The beveled glass gave the light cast down across the tiles a shimmering liquid quality. In the pool, off-center in a way that seemed right without Jensen understanding exactly why it felt right, stood a dark, pitted rock with a bell atop it. It was a remarkably quiet sanctuary in the center of such a busy place. Seeing the square with the bell sparked her memory of similar places. When the bell tolled, she recalled, the people came to such squares to bow down and chant a devotion to the Lord Rawl. She suspected that such homage was one price paid for the honor of being allowed in his palace. People sat on the low wall around the edge, talking in hushed tones, watching orange fish gliding through the dark water. Even Sebastian stared for a few minutes before moving on. Everywhere there were alert soldiers. Some seemed to be stationed at key spots. Squads of guards moved through the halls, watching everyone, stopping some people to speak with them. What the soldiers asked, Jensen didn't know, but it worried her greatly. "What do we say if they question us?" she asked. "It's best not to say anything unless you have to." "But if you have to, then what?" "Tell them that we live on a farm to the south. Farmers are isolated and don't know much about anything but life on their farm, so it wouldn't sound suspicious if we say we don't know about anything else. We came to see the palace and perhaps buy a few small things, herbs and such." Jensen had met farmers and didn't think they were as ignorant of things as Sebastian seemed to think. "Farmers grow or collect their own herbs," she said. "I don't think they would need to come to the palace to buy them." "Well, then, we came to buy some nice cloth so you could make clothes for the baby."
"Baby? What baby?"
"Your baby. You are my wife and only recently found yourself pregnant. You are with child." Jensen felt her face flush to red. She couldn't say she was pregnant. That would only lead to more questions. "All right, we're farmers here to buy a few small things, herbs and such, rare herbs we don't grow ourselves." His only answer was a sideways glance and a smile. His arm returned to her waist, as if to banish her embarrassment. Beyond another intersection of wide passageways, following the directions they'd been given, they turned down another hall to the right. It, too, was lined with vendors. Jensen immediately spotted the booth with a gilded star hanging before it. She didn't know if it was intentional or not, but the gilded star had 8 points, like the star in a grace. She had drawn the grace often enough to know. With Sebastian at her side, she rushed over to the booth. Her heart sank when they found the place occupied only by an empty chair, but it was still morning, and she reasoned that maybe he hadn't come in yet. The closest businesses weren't yet open either. She stopped several stalls down at a place selling leather mugs. "Do you know if the gilder is here today?" she asked the man working behind the bench.
"Sorry, I don't know," he said without looking up from his work at cutting decorations with a fine gouge. "I just started here."
She hurried down to the next occupied booth, a place that sold hangings with colorful scenes sewn on them. She turned to say something to Sebastian, but saw him inquiring at another booth not far away. The woman behind the short counter was sewing a blue brook through mountains stitched on a stretched square of coarsely woven cloth. Some of the scenes were made up into pillows displayed on a rack to the back.
"Mistress, would you know if the gilder is here today?"
The woman smiled up at her.
"Sorry, but as far as I know, he won't be in today."
"Oh, I see." Thwarted by the disappointing news, Jensen hesitated, not knowing what to do next.
"Would you know when he will return, at least?"
The woman pushed her needle through, making a blue stitch of water.
"No, I can't say as I do. Last time I saw him over a week ago, he said he may not be back for a while."
"Why is that, do you know?"
"Can't say as I do."
She pulled the long thread of the water out taut.
"Sometimes he stays away for a spell, working at his gilding, doing up enough to make it worth his time to travel to the palace."
"Would you happen to know where he lives?" The woman glanced up from under a crinkled brow.
"Why do you wish to know?"
Jensen's mind raced. She said the only thing she could think of, what she had learned from Irma, the sausage lady, watching Betty for her.
"I wish to go for a telling."
"Ah," the woman said, her suspicion fading as she pulled another stitch through.
"It's Althea, then, that you really want to see?"
Jensen nodded. "My mother took me to Althea when I was young. Since my mother passed away,
I'd like to visit Althea again. I thought it might be a comfort if I went for a telling.
Sorry about your mother, dear. I know what you mean. When I lost my mother, it was a hard time for me, too.
Could you tell me how to find Althea's place?
She set her sewing down and came to the low wall at the front of her booth.
It's a goodly ways to Althea's place, to the west, through a desolate land.
The Azrith Plains?
That's right. Going west, the land turns rugged, with mountains. Around the other side of the largest snow-capped mountain due west of here, if you turn north, staying just the other side of the cliffs, you will find, following the low land down lower yet, you will come into a nasty place, a swampy place. Althea and Friedrich live there.
In a swamp? But not in the winter.
The woman leaned close and lowered her voice.
Yes, even in the winter, people say. Althea's swamp. A vile place it is, too. Some say it isn't a natural place, if you know what I mean.
Her magic, you mean? She shrugged.
Some say.
Jensen nodded in thanks and repeated the directions. Other side of the largest snow-capped peak west of here, stay below the cliffs and go north, down in a swampy place.
A nasty, dangerous swampy place.
The woman used a long fingernail to scratch her scalp.
But you don't want to be going there unless you're invited.
Jensen glanced around briefly to signal to Sebastian, but she didn't see him right off.
How does one get invited?
Most people ask Friedrich. I see them come here to talk to him and leave without even looking at his work. I guess he asks Althea if she will see them, and the next time he returns with his gilding, he invites them. Sometimes people give him a letter to take to his wife.
Some people travel out there and wait. I hear that sometimes he comes out of the swamp to meet those people and pass along Althea's invitation.
Some people return from the edge of the swamp without ever being invited in. Their long wait for nothing.
None dare venture in uninvited, though. Least none that ever did come back to tell about it, if you know what I mean.
Are you saying I'll have to go there and just wait? Wait until she or her husband comes to invite us in?
Guess so. But it won't be Althea who comes out. She never comes out of her swamp, as I hear it. You could come back here each day until Friedrich finally returns to sell his gilding. He's never been away for more than a month. I'd say he'll be back to the palace within a few weeks at most.
Weeks.
Jensen couldn't stay in one place waiting weeks while Lord Rawl's men hunted her, closing in day by day. From as close as Sebastian said they were, she didn't think she even had days, much less weeks, before they would have her.
Thank you, then, for all your help. I guess I'll come back another day to see if Friedrich has returned and ask him if I might go for a telling.
The woman smiled as she sat back down and picked up her sewing.
That might be best.
She looked up.
Sorry to hear about your mother, dear. It's hard, I know.
She nodded, her eyes watery, fearing to test her voice just then. The vivid scene flashed through her mind. The men, the blood everywhere, the terror of them coming for her, seeing her mother slumped on the floor, stabbed, her arms severed. With effort, Jensen pushed the memory away, lest it consume her in grief and anger. She had immediate worries. They had made a long and difficult journey in winter to find Althea to obtain her help. They couldn't wait around, hoping to be invited to visit Althea. Lord Rawl's men were close on their heels. The last time Jensen had wavered in her determination, she had missed her chance, and Lathea had been murdered. The same thing could happen again. She had to get to Althea before those men did, at least to tell her about her sister, to warn her, if nothing else. Jensen scanned the vast hallway, searching for Sebastian. He couldn't have gone far. She saw him then, his back to her, across the broad corridor, just turning away from a place that sold silver jewelry. Before she took two steps, she saw soldiers swarm in and surround him. Jensen froze in her tracks. Sebastian did too. One of the soldiers used his sword to carefully lift back Sebastian's cloak, uncovering his array of weapons. She was too frightened to move, to take another step. Half a dozen gleaming razor-edged pikes lowered at Sebastian. Swords came out of sheaths. People nearby backed away, others turned to look.
In the center of a ring of Daharan soldiers towering over him, Sebastian held his arms out to the sides in surrender.
Surrender. Just then a bell, the one back at the square, tolled.
Chapter 17. The single long peal of the bell calling people to the devotion echoed through the cavernous halls as two of the big men seized Sebastian by the arms and started bearing him away. Jensen watched helplessly as the rest of the Daharan soldiers surrounded him in a tight formation bristling with steel, meant not only to keep their prisoner at bay, but to ward any possible attempt to extricate him. It was immediately clear to her that these guards were prepared for any eventuality and took no chances, not knowing if this one armed man might signify a force about to storm the palace. Jensen saw that there were other men, visitors to the palace like Sebastian, also carrying swords. Perhaps it was that Sebastian carried a variety of combat weapons, and they were all concealed. That so raised the soldiers' suspicions. But he wasn't doing anything. It was winter. Of course he was wearing a cloak. He was causing no harm. Jensen's urge was to yell at the soldiers to leave him be, yet she feared that if she did, they would take her too. The people who had spread back away from the potential trouble, along with everyone else strolling in the halls, all began moving toward the square. People in the shops set down their work to join them. No one paid much attention to the soldiers' business. In response to that single chime still hanging in the air, laughter and talking trailed off to respectful whispers. Panic clawed at Jensen as she saw the soldiers muscling Sebastian down a hall to the side. She could see his white hair amid the dark armor. She didn't know what to do. This wasn't supposed to happen. They only came to find a guilder. She wanted to scream for the soldiers to stop. She dared not, though.
Jensen.
Jensen stood her ground against the current of bodies, trying to keep Sebastian and his captors in sight. The Lord Rawl was after her, and now they had Sebastian. Her mother had been murdered, and now they were taking Sebastian. It wasn't fair. As she watched, afraid to do anything to stop the soldiers, her own fear shamed her. Sebastian had done so much for her. He had made so many sacrifices for her. He had risked his life to save hers. Jensen's breath came in ragged pulls, but what could she do?
Surrender.
It wasn't fair what they were doing to Sebastian, to her, to innocent people. Anger welled up through her fear.
Tuvash misht.
He was only there because of her. She had asked him to come.
Tuvask misht.
Now he was in trouble.
Grushteva du kalt misht.
The words sounded so right. They flared through her, carried on flames of igniting rage. People pushed against her. She growled through gritted teeth as she squeezed her way among the crush of people, trying to follow the soldiers who had Sebastian. It wasn't fair. She wanted them to stop. Just stop. Stop. Her helplessness frustrated her. She was sick of it. When they wouldn't stop, when they kept going, it only further enraged her.
Surrender.
Jensen's hand slid inside her cloak. The touch of cold steel welcomed her. Her fingers tightened around the hilt of her knife. She could feel the worked metal of the symbol of the House of Rawl pressing into the flesh of her palm. A soldier gently pushed her, turning her in the direction of the rest of the crowd.
The devotion square is that way, ma'am.
It was spoken as a suggestion, but wrapped around the core of command. Through the rage, she looked up into his hooded eyes. She saw the dead man's eyes. She saw the soldiers at her house, men on the floor, dead, men coming for her, men grabbing her. She saw flashes of movement through a crimson sheen of blood. As she and the soldier stared into each other's eyes, she felt the blade at her waist coming out of its sheath. A hand under her arm tugged at her.
This way, dear. I'll show you where it is.
Jensen blinked. It was the lady who had given her directions to Althea's place. The woman, who sat in the palace of the murdering bastard Lord Rawl and sowed the peaceful scenes of the mountains and brooks. Jensen stared at the woman, at her inexplicable smile, trying to make sense of her. Jensen found everything around her strangely incomprehensible. She only knew that her hand was on the hilt of her knife, and she longed for the blade to be free. But for some reason, the knife stubbornly remained where it was. Jensen, at first convinced that some malevolent magic had seized her, saw then that the woman had a tight motherly arm around her. Without realizing it, the woman was keeping Jensen's blade in its sheath. Jensen locked her knees, resisting being pulled along. The woman's eyes now were set with warning. "No one misses a devotion, dear. No one. Let me show you where it is." The soldier, his expression grim, watched as Jensen yielded, allowing herself to be guided by the woman. Jensen and the woman swept into the current of people moving toward the square, left the soldier behind. She looked up into the woman's smiling face. The whole world seemed to Jensen to be swimming in a strange light. The voices around her were a smear of sound that in her mind was pierced by the echoes of screams from her house. "Jensen!" Through the murmuring around her, the voice, sharp and distinct, caught her attention. Jensen listened, alert to what it might tell her. "Surrender your will, Jensen." It made sense in a visceral way. "Surrender your flesh." Nothing else seemed to matter anymore. Nothing she had tried in her whole life had brought her salvation or safety or peace. To the contrary, everything seemed lost. There seemed nothing else to lose. "Here we are, dear," the woman said. Jensen looked around. "What? Here we are." Jensen felt her knees touch the tiled floor as the woman urged her down. People were all around. Before them was the square with the pool of quiet water at its center. She wanted only the voice.
"Jensen, surrender."
The voice had grown harsh, commanding. It fanned the flames of her anger, her rage, her wrath. Jensen bent forward, trembling, in the grip of rage. Somewhere, in the far corners of her mind, screamed a distant terror. Despite that remote sense of foreboding, it was rage that was carrying her will away.
"Surrender!"
She saw strings of her saliva hanging, dripping as she panted through parted lips. Tears dropped to the tiles, close beneath her face. Her nose ran. Her breath came in gasps. Her eyes were open so wide it hurt. She shook all over, as if alone in the coldest, darkest winter night. She couldn't make herself stop. People bowed forward deeply, hands pressed to the tiles. She wanted her knife out. Jensen lusted for the voice.
"Master Rawl, guide us."
It was not the voice. It was the people all around, in one voice, chanting the devotion. As they began, they all bowed farther forward until their foreheads touched the tile floor. A soldier moved past, close behind, patrolling, watching as she knelt, bent over, hands to the floor, quaking uncontrollably. Inch by halting inch, as she gasped, panted, shook, Jensen's head lowered until her forehead touched the floor.
"Master Rawl, teach us."
That was not what she wanted to hear. She wanted the voice. She raged for it. She wanted her knife. She wanted blood.
"Master Rawl, protect us."
The people all chanted in unison. Jensen, pulling ragged, jerking breaths, consumed with loathing, wanted only the voice, and her blade free, but her palms were flat on the tiles. She listened for the voice, but heard only the chant of the devotion.
"In your light we thrive, in your mercy we are sheltered, in your wisdom we are humbled, we live only to serve, our lives are yours."
At first, Jensen only vaguely remembered it from her youth, from when she had lived at the palace. Hearing it now, that memory came flooding back. She had known the words. She had chanted them when she was little. When they fled the palace, running from Lord Rahl, she had banished the words of the devotion to the man who was trying to kill her and her mother. Now, hungering for the voice that wanted her to surrender, almost unbeknownst to her, almost as if it were someone else doing it, her trembling lips began moving with the words. Master Rahl, guide us. Master Rahl, teach us. Master Rahl, protect us. In your light we thrive. In your mercy we are sheltered. In your wisdom we are humbled. We live only to serve. Our lives are yours. The cadence of those murmured words filled the great hall, many people, but one voice resounding powerfully off the walls. She listened with all her strength for the voice that had been her companion for nearly as long as she could remember, but it wasn't there. Now Jensen was helplessly carried along with all the others. She clearly heard herself speaking the words, Master Rahl, guide us. Master Rahl, teach us. Master Rahl, protect us. In your light we thrive. In your mercy we are sheltered. In your wisdom we are humbled. We live only to serve. Our lives are yours. Over and over, Jensen softly spoke the words of the devotion along with everyone else. Over and over, without pause but for breath. Over and over, yet without haste. The chant filled her mind. It beckoned to her, spoke to her. It was all that filled her thoughts as she chanted it over and over and over. It filled her so completely that it left no room for anything else. Somehow, it calmed her. Time slipped by, incidental, inconspicuous, unimportant. Somehow the soft chant brought her a sense of peace. It reminded her of how Betty calmed when having her ears smoothed. Jensen's rage was being smoothed. She fought against it, but bit by bit, she was pulled into the chant, into its promise, smoothed and gentled. She understood then why it was called a devotion. Despite everything, it drained her and then filled her with a profound calm, a serene sense of belonging. She no longer fought the words. She allowed herself to whisper them, letting them lift away the shards of pain. For that time, as she knelt, her head to the tiles, with nothing to do but say the words, she was free of anything and everything. As she chanted along with everyone else, the shadow cast on the floor from the mullions of the leaded glass overhead moved past her, leaving her in the glow of the full sun. It felt warm and protective. It felt like her mother's warm embrace. Her body felt light. The soft radiance all around reminded Jensen of how she pictured the good spirits. An instant in time later, the hours of chanting were ended. Jensen uncurled, slowly pushing away from the floor to sit up with the others. Without warning, a sob poured forth. Anything wrong here? There was a soldier towering over her. The woman to the side put an arm around Jensen's shoulders. Her mother passed away recently, the woman quietly explained. The soldier shifted his weight, looking ill at ease. I'm sorry, ma'am. My heartfelt sympathy to you and your family. Jensen saw in his blue eyes that he meant every word. Stunned, speechless, she watched as he turned, huge and muscular, layered in leather. Lord Rawl's killer continuing on his patrol. Empathy and armor. If he knew who she was, he would deliver her into the hands of those who would see to it that she suffered a long and lingering death. Jensen buried her face in the stranger's shoulder and wept for her mother, whose embrace had felt so good. She missed her mother beyond endurance, and now she was terrified for Sebastian. Chapter 18. Jensen thanked the woman who sewed country scenes and gave directions. Only after Jensen had started down the hall did she realize that she didn't even know the woman's name. It didn't really matter. They both had mothers. Both understood and shared the same feelings. Now that the devotion was over, the noise of all the people in the palace rose again to resound off marble walls and columns. Laughter could be heard ringing out across the hall. People had gone back to their own concerns, buying, trading, discussing their wants and needs. Guards patrolled, and palace staff, most in light-colored robes, went about their business, carrying messages, seeing to matters Jensen could only guess at. In one place, workers were at the task of repairing the hinges on a huge oak double door to a side passageway. The cleaning staff was back, too, busy at dusting, mopping, polishing. Jensen's mother had once been one of those women, seeing to the work in the sections of the palace closed off to the public, official rooms where matters of governance were conducted, the sections that housed the officials and palace staff, and, of course, Lord Rawl's rooms. After chanting the devotion for hours, Jensen's mind was as clear as if she had had a long and needed rest. In that calm but refreshed and wide-awake state, a solution had come to her. She knew what she had to do. She moved quickly, back the way she had come. There was no time to lose. On balconies above, people who lived at the People's Palace gazed down on the hall as they went about their work, watching those who had come to marvel at the great place. Jensen focused on keeping her wits about her as she moved through the throngs. Sebastian had warned her not to run and cause people to wonder if there was something wrong. He had cautioned her to act normal, lest she give people reason to take note. Yet so acute was the danger of being at the palace that he had been captured despite knowing how to act. If she raised suspicion, then soldiers would surely stop her. If the soldiers got a hold of her and found out who she was. Jensen ached to have Sebastian back. Her fear for him urged her down the hall. She had to get him away from the Daharan soldiers before they did something terrible to him. She knew that every minute they had him, he was in mortal danger. If they tortured him, he might not be able to hold out. If he confessed to who he was, they would put him to death. The thought of Sebastian being executed almost made her knees give out. Under torture, people would confess to anything, whether true or not. If they decided to torture him to make him confess to something, he was doomed. The mental image of Sebastian being tortured made her sick and dizzy. She had to rescue him. But to do that, she had to have the sorceress's help. If Althea would help her, cast Jensen a protective spell, then she could try to get Sebastian back. Althea had to help her. Jensen would convince her. Sebastian's life hung in the balance. She reached the stairs where they had come up. People were still emptying up into the hall, some sweating and huffing with the effort of the climb. Few were going down yet. Standing at the edge, hand on the marble rail, she took a careful look around, making sure she wasn't being followed or observed. Despite her urge to run, she made herself look around casually. Some people looked at her, but no more than they looked at anyone. Patrolling soldiers were a good distance off. Jensen started down. She went as quickly as possible without looking like she was running for her life, for Sebastian's life. But she was. If not for Jensen, he would not be in this trouble. She thought that going down would be easy, but after hundreds of steps, she found that going down was tiring on the legs. Her legs burned with the effort. She told herself that if she couldn't run, she could at least not stop, but keep going, and in that way make better time. On the landing, she cut the corners, saving steps. When no one was looking, she took the stairs two at a time. When she had to traverse passageways, she tried to screen herself behind clumps of people as she went past watchful guards. People sitting on benches, eating bread and meat pies, drinking ale, talking with friends, casually noted her along with everyone else who passed, just another visitor going by. Lord Rawl's half-sister among them. On the steps again, she went quickly, her legs trembling from the non-stop effort. Her muscles burned with the need of a rest, but she gave them none. Instead, she pushed faster when she had the chance. On an empty flight of stairs between two landings screened from sight because they turned from different directions, Jensen raced recklessly down. She slowed again when a couple, arm in arm, their heads close together as they giggled over whispered words, reached the landing below and headed up. The air grew colder as she descended. On one level, with guards thick as flies in a barn in spring, one of the soldiers looked right into her eyes and smiled. Stunned to a stop for an instant, she realized that he was smiling at her as a man smiled at a woman, not as a killer smiled at his victim. She returned the smile, polite, warm, but not so much as to give the impression that she was encouraging him. Jensen pulled her cloak tight and turned down the next flight of stairs. When she glanced over her shoulder as she turned the corner on a landing, he stood above, one hand on the rail, watching her. He smiled again and waved a farewell before turning back to his duties. Unable to contain her fear, Jensen sprinted down the stairs two at a time and ran down the hall, past small stands selling food, brooches, and finely decorated daggers, past visitors sitting on stone benches set before the marble balustrade, on toward the next flight of stairs until she realized that people were staring at her. She stopped running and fell casually into walking, trying to flounce to make it look as if she had been dashing from youthful vivacity. The tactic worked. She saw the people who had been eyeing her seem to chalk it up as nothing more than a spirited girl dashing along. They turned back to their own business. Since it worked, Jensen intermittently used the same trick and was able to make better time. Breathing hard from the long descent, she finally made it to the cave-like entrance with the hissing torches. Since there were so many soldiers at the portal into the Great Plateau, she slowed and walked close behind an older couple to make it look as if she might be a daughter with her parents. The couple was engaged in a spirited debate of a friend's chances of making a go with it with his new shop selling wigs up in the palace. The woman thought it a good business. The man thought his friend would run out of willing sellers of their hair and would end up spending too much of his time looking for more. Jensen could imagine no more foolish conversation when a man had been taken prisoner and was about to be tortured and probably put to death. To Jensen, the Daharan Palace was nothing more than a vile death trap. She had to get Sebastian out of there. She would get him out. Neither one of the couple noticed Jensen close behind, head bowed, matching their slow pace. The gaze of guards skimmed over the three of them. At the mouth of the opening, cold wind swept in to take the breath from Jensen's lungs. After being in the lamp-lit darkness for so long, she had to squint at the expanse of bright daylight. As soon as they were in the open-air market, she turned down one of the makeshift streets, hurrying to find Irma the sausage lady. Stretching her neck, she looked about for the red scarf as she rushed down the rows of stalls. The places that before had seemed so splendid now looked shabby after she had been in the palace. In the whole of her life, Jensen had never seen anything like the people's palace. She could not imagine how a place of such beauty could hold such ugliness as the House of Rawl. A hawker pushed in close.
Charms for the lady? Good luck for sure.
Jensen kept walking. His breath stank.
Special charms with magic. Can't go wrong for a silver penny.
No, thank you. He walked sideways, right close in front of her, but off to the side a bit.
Just a silver penny, my lady.
She thought she would trip over the man's feet. No, thank you. Please, leave me be now.
A copper penny, then.
No. Jensen shoved him each time he bumped into her, as he pushed in close, yammering about his charms. He kept putting his face in front of hers, looking back up at her as he stooped and shuffled along, grinning at her.
Good charms they are, my lady.
He kept bumping her as she tried to walk, as she craned her neck, looking for the red scarf.
Good luck for you.
No, I said. Almost stumbling over the man, she gave him a stiff shove. Please leave me be. Jensen sighed in relief as an older man came past, going in the opposite direction, and the hawker turned to him. She could hear his voice fade behind, trying to sell the man a magic charm for a silver penny. She thought about the irony that here this man was offering magic, and she turned it down because she was in a hurry to be off to try to get magic from someone else. Past an empty space, before a table with wine casks, Jensen halted abruptly. She looked up and saw the three brothers. One was pouring wine into a leather goblet for a customer, while the other two were lifting a full cask from the back of their wagon. Jensen turned and stared at the empty space. That was where Irma had been. Her heart felt as if it came up in her throat. Irma had their horses. Irma had Betty. In a panic, she seized the arm of the man behind the table as the customer departed. "Please, could you tell me where Irma is?" He looked up, squinting in the sunlight.
"The sausage lady?"
Jensen nodded. "Yes, where is she? She couldn't be gone already. She had her sausages to sell." The man grinned.
"She said that being beside us selling our wine had helped sell her sausages faster than she had ever sold them before."
Jensen could only stare.
"She's gone?"
"Too bad, too. Having sausages for sale next to us really helped sell wine. People ate those spicy goat sausages of hers and had to have some of our wine."
"Her what?"
Jensen whispered.
The man's smile flagged. "Her sausages. What's wrong, ma'am? You look as if a spirit from the underworld just tapped you on the shoulder."
"What did you say she sells? Goat sausages?"
He nodded, looking concerned.
"Among others. I tried them all, but I liked the spicy goat sausages best."
He lifted a thumb over his shoulder, indicating his two brothers.
"Joe liked her beef sausages best, and Clayton, well, he liked the pork, but I favored her goat sausages."
Jensen was shivering, and it wasn't the cold. "Where is she? I have to find her." The man scratched his head of disheveled blonde hair.
"I'm sorry, but I don't know. She comes here to sell sausages. Most folks around here have seen her before. She's a nice lady, always a smile and a good word."
Jensen felt freezing tears run down her cheeks.
"But where is she? Where does she live? I have to find her."
The man grasped Jensen's arm, as if fearing she might fall.
"Sorry, ma'am, but I don't know. Why? What's wrong?"
"She has my animals, my horses, and Betty."
"Betty?"
"My goat. She has them. We paid her to watch them until we got back."
"Oh."
He looked gloomy to have no better news for her.
"Sorry. Her sausages pretty much sold steady till they were gone. It usually takes her all day long to sell what she cooks up, but sometimes it just goes better, I guess. After her sausages were gone, she sat around and talked to us for a long spell. Finally, she let out a sigh and said she had to get home."
Jensen's mind raced. The world felt as if it were spinning around her. She didn't know what to do. She felt dazed, confused. Jensen had never felt so alone.
"Please," she said, her voice choked with tears. "Please, could I rent one of your horses?"
"Our horses? Then how would we get our wagon home? Besides, they're draft horses. We don't have any saddle or tack for riding or any—"
"Please, I have gold."
Jensen groped at her belt.
"I can pay."
Feeling around at her waist, she couldn't find her small leather pouch with her gold and silver coins. Jensen threw back her cloak, searching. There, on her belt, beside her knife, she found only a small piece of a leather thong, parted cleanly.
"My purse! My purse is gone!"
She couldn't get her breath.
"My money!"
The man's face sagged with sorrow as he watched her pull the remnant of the drawstring from her belt.
"There are wicked people prowling around looking to steal—"
"But I need it!"
He fell silent. She looked back behind, searching for the hawker selling charms. It all flashed back through her mind. He had bumped into her, jostled her. He was really cutting her purse. She couldn't even recall what he looked like. Just that he was scruffy and ill-kept. She hadn't wanted to look at his face, meet his eyes. She couldn't seem to get her breath as she frantically looked this way and that, trying to find the man who had stolen her money.